This podcast contains intense subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
I'm just worried that there's a lot of things that I don't remember well. The case number is 91654.
At or about 4 o'clock p.m., September 7th, 1976, Sergeant Rigney and myself went to the Ralph Otto residence, 1308 29th Street, to question him concerning the disappearance of his wife, Patricia Otto. Ralph wasn't home when we arrived. While we were at the residence, we observed and examined a large tarp to the west side of the residence spread out in the lawn. We looked at the tarp to determine whether or not there were any signs of blood, hair, or other physical evidence where a body could have been transported in the tarp.
Lewiston, Idaho police detectives were looking into the disappearance of 24-year-old Patricia Lee Otto, a married mother of two young girls. The first voice you heard belongs to retired police detective Tom Saleen. Then you heard a portion of his actual 1976 police report read by one of our colleagues. Patty, as most people called her, was reportedly last seen alive by her husband Ralph late in the evening of August 31st, 1976. He told people the two had a heated argument and went to bed in different rooms to cool off. Neighbors didn't hear this particular fight, but they'd heard plenty of fights before. Patty and Ralph's young daughters woke the next morning and began looking everywhere for their mom. She was nowhere to be found. Ralph didn't report Patty missing, though. He told everyone that Patty had threatened to leave the kids with him before, just so he would know what it was like to raise them on his own. He said Patty had simply walked into the night, without packing a bag, leaving a note, or even taking her car, which was parked right outside. The youngest daughter remembers seeing part of a scuffle between her parents that night. Her sister told her it was just a bad dream. This is the story about the decades-long search for the girl's mother. It's a story about outlaws and in-laws, police detectives, suspects and potential accomplices, blatant lies, conspiracy theories, reams and reams of circumstantial evidence, and a mind-boggling lack of concrete proof.
Ralph found out that she was working as a prostitute.
I think they put her into human trafficking.
We received information that there was a secret room in the basement that was all paneled off.
I think that we broke up a mafia ring in this city.
But it was common knowledge that they were running a call girl ring.
You know, he's telling me we're dealing with a big deal here. Very dangerous people.
What happened to Patricia Lee Otto? This is also the story of a woman whose body was found almost exactly 2 years after Patty disappeared. Her remains are still waiting to be identified. It's the mystery of who that woman was, what happened to her, and whether or not she could be Patty Otto. In the age of DNA, how can we not be sure? And if it's not Patty, then who? And who killed her and why? A cadre of volunteer researchers and people who loved Patty are all asking those same questions. More than 45 years later, they're still waiting for answers, still waiting for justice, still waiting for peace. From the pages of the reporter's notebook. This is Still, Season 2. I'm your host, Gary Anderson.
I don't believe she left at all. I believe that he somehow killed her and then somehow by himself or with others did something with the body. Everything else after and in between is him trying to protect his liberty.
That's retired Detective Tom Saleen again. He was the primary investigator looking into Patty's disappearance. He's convinced that Patty's husband, Ralph Otto, killed her that night. Throughout this season, you'll hear from Celine. You'll also hear the text from many of his and other investigators' reports. And you'll listen in as my colleagues and I, Christine Hughes and Karen Shaw Anderson, read through transcripts from taped police interviews and portions of handwritten notes from some of the people surrounding this investigation. Most importantly, you'll hear the actual voices of Patty's family, people connected to Ralph, and the volunteer sleuths who have devoted years of their lives to solving these cases. We couldn't have put this season together without the tireless work and relentless determination of so many people. We will carefully comb through the documented facts and let you mentally sift out half-truths, rumors, concealed circumstances, and seemingly far-fetched theories. Most of the facts lead us straight back to Ralph as the cause of Patty's disappearance, the night of August 31st, 1976. But some of the details of this case also appear to contradict our assumptions. It's certain that some of the information we've been given was designed to send us scurrying after shadows. How much of it should we actually believe? After you hear this tangled story, we'll be curious to know what you think. You may come to a different conclusion than we did. We first learned about this case, actually these two cases, in the summer of 2021. Patty Otto's youngest daughter, the one who remembers seeing her parents fighting that night in 1976, was scrolling through social media late one evening. She froze after seeing an image that looked an awful lot like herself.
I sat straight up in my bed and I'm like, that's my mother. This guy drew my mother. Who is this guy? And I start messaging like crazy. Who are these people? How did they get my mother's picture? Who is this missing person?
The image was posted by volunteer investigators trying to identify a Jane Doe found in 1978 in a remote area of Oregon. The image was a forensic anthropologist's rendering of what that woman may have looked like based on her skeletonized remains. Law enforcement working on the case back then estimated she had been dead for at least 2 years when she was found. It appeared that she had been strangled. Elk hunters hiking through a wooded trail had stumbled across her shallow grave. Animals had helped unearth her skull. In the grave, pieces of clothing were found. Scraps of cloth seemed to be from a pair of red pants and a white top. Law enforcement spent months comparing her clothing, hair color, body size, and teeth to records of missing women from across the Northwest, but they still had no idea who she was. Records indicate that they did compare her to Patty Otto and ruled her out as a match. But there are questions about how those comparisons were made, which we'll discuss in detail later. If it was indeed Patty Otto, The mystery remains how she got there. The location where she was found is a treacherous 3-hour drive from her home in Lewiston, Idaho. In the taped interview Ralph gave to police investigators on September 7th, he said that Patty disappeared sometime between 11 p.m. August 31st and mid-morning September 1st, 1976. Her parents know that she was alive shortly before 11 p.m. That's when she left their house, so that time is confirmed. We also know Ralph started telling people the next afternoon that Patty had left him. Ralph told police that Patty came home with the children. He and Patty fought, and she left. He said he heard her leave after he went to bed, and he didn't go up to check on her. But he did say he looked in on his daughters, who were sleeping in a basement bedroom. At about 1:30 the next afternoon, Ralph called Patty's younger sister, Alice Mills, and told her he couldn't find Patty. He asked Alice if Patty was there with her, and then he asked Alice to watch his daughters while he searched for his wife. The girls were much too young to be left home alone. Natalie, the oldest, hadn't even turned 5 yet. Dallas, the younger daughter, was still just 2 years old. At about 2 that afternoon, Ralph dropped the girls off at Alice's house and said he was going to drive to the town of Winchester, Idaho, about 40 minutes southeast of Lewiston, to look for Patty. When he arrived at Alice's house, it was apparent to Alice that Ralph had been drinking, and he was complaining that he couldn't find one of his handguns. In the recorded interview with police, Ralph later described going to Winchester that day and looking for Patty at a bar called the Woodshed because he believed Patty hung out there often. He said he didn't find her there, but did he really even look? Each time Ralph talked to police about what happened in the minutes before Patty's disappearance, the specifics changed a little, usually with new details. In the earliest versions of his story, Ralph said they had simply argued. He said he suggested that they go to bed in different rooms to cool down. Later, he said Patty slapped him, but he denied hitting her. Sometimes he mentioned hearing a horn honk outside and a door slam as Patty left the house. Other times, he said he didn't hear anything at all, or that he wasn't sure how far away the car was that honked. It could have been in a nearby park, and he wasn't certain what he heard was even that night. In his first statement to police, Ralph said she took her purse with her. In a later account, he said he saw 5 $100 bills in her purse shortly before she disappeared. Ralph's family said she packed a suitcase, but there's no reference in official reports about belongings she may have taken other than her purse or the clothes she was wearing. Red pants and a white sleeveless blouse.
Ralph Otto was requested to come to the Lewiston Police Department to be questioned concerning the disappearance of his wife, and that was done. At 5 o'clock p.m., a statement was taken from Otto. The statement ended approximately 5:30 or shortly thereafter. Present in the office is one Ralph S. Otto and myself, Sergeant Celine. This conversation is being recorded by dictaphone.
During that interview, Ralph didn't explain to police his rationale for believing his wife would hang out at a bar 40 minutes from their home. But we do know that his story about going to Winchester was a lie. He also told police about going to a different bar in Lewiston called Van's Club that day. Police were able to verify that he did indeed go to Van's Club, but his visit there was actually on August 31st. A few hours before Patty vanished, not September 1st, as he had told detectives. The bartender had called police after Ralph showed up there with a handgun tucked into his waistband and demanded to see a man named Randy. Ralph believed that the man he was looking for worked at the bar. We'll talk more about that storyline soon. I will tell you, though, that aside from making a number of phone calls in the weeks that followed, we're certain that Ralph never physically searched for Patty beyond his own yard. I'll also tell you now that the tarp police saw in Ralph's yard didn't reveal any clues. That first day of September, instead of actually driving southeast to the bar in Winchester, Idaho, Ralph headed west, taking a bridge across the Snake River. He then drove a few miles south to the small town of Asotin, Washington, to visit a woman named Bonnie Shopbell. We heard from Bonnie, and you'll hear what she told us as the story unfolds. Ralph had been spending quite a bit of time with Bonnie in recent days, including on the day of his wife's disappearance. We learned that Ralph had spent most of the day on August 31st with Bonnie before he went to Van's Club in Lewiston with a gun. And he took his daughters back to Bonnie's house the morning of September 1st before calling Alice to say that Patty had left him. We have to wonder if a man who had just murdered his wife would expend so little effort concealing his lies. Did he really think investigators wouldn't check his story? Ralph had spent the better part of a week helping Bonnie finish packing up her house. She was moving away to California. After spending the morning with her and then dropping his daughters off with Alice sometime in the afternoon of September 1st, Ralph went back and picked up Bonnie to take her shopping to buy a new outfit. He also had dinner with her and her parents that evening and returned to Bonnie's parents' house for breakfast the next morning on September 2nd. He stayed and visited with the family before Bonnie followed him back to his house on the way out of town. At Ralph's house, he checked her car's fluid levels and then she drove away for California. Late in the evening, on September 2nd, Patty's sister, Alice Mills, and her parents, Tom and Artis O'Malley, who everyone called Toots, contacted police to report Patty missing. Ralph still hadn't returned to Alice's house to pick up his daughters. If Ralph had indeed killed Patty sometime overnight between August 31st and September 1st, he didn't have much time to hide the body. We do know, though, that he called at least two friends that night, saying he was in trouble and needed help. Both friends said no, but didn't ask what sort of trouble Ralph was in. Did he call someone else who did agree to help? We'd really like to know that answer.
Out here.
It is getting warm, isn't it?
My colleagues and I met Patty's sister Alice at her home in Idaho to talk about Patty's disappearance on what would have been Patty's 69th birthday, August 4th, 2021.
This is my Uncle Ben.
Hi.
Ben. Nice Karen. To meet you.
Gary.
Hi.
Christine.
Christine.
And my Auntie Alice.
Alice.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Karen.
Alice still lives in Lewiston and hasn't changed her phone number in case Patty is somehow still alive and wants to reach out. This is Alice talking in a recorded phone call weeks after that first meeting. We were asking about Alice's relationship with her sister and Patty's life before she disappeared. She said they talked every day and usually saw each other too. Alice said that Patty never left the girls in Ralph's care because he would often drink until he passed out.
Oh, no, I had the kids a lot. Not necessarily babysitting. I would just, she'd come up with the kids. The weather a lot, of, it's when she went to school is when we'd babysit, because she never would leave the kids with Ralph by themselves. He never watched the kids. So she had an appointment or something. At first, mom was working, so I'd watch him. But it was always, usually family, yeah, watching him, mom, dad, or me.
According to documentation we've obtained, Ralph was also taking more than twice the standard maximum dose of Valium. The Valium was prescribed by a Lewiston doctor who was trying to help Ralph with nervousness and trouble sleeping while attempting to quit drinking. But Ralph often swallowed the Valium with whiskey. Alice told us that Patty was fed up with Ralph's drinking, which had led to more than one separation for Patty and Ralph. Ralph had gone into treatment for alcoholism several times, but he hadn't successfully sobered up. There was also the issue of Ralph's involvement with other women.
Patty knew he was seeing this Bonnie. We'd seen him together. She had seen him together. And then when that Bonnie had that baby, that he thought it could be his, and he was always wanting to buy things and go visit and stuff, and it really bothered Patty.
Do you think that's part of what the fight was about, the night she disappeared, was Bonnie?
No, I don't think so. It could be just everything coming up. I think the night that the last fight they got into, I think was the last straw. Ralph knew that Patty had went out with Randy. And there's no way anybody's going to have anything that belongs to Ralph.
Patty and Ralph met while she was still in high school. She was 18 when they married in 1970.
Yes, I have.
He was a divorced 35-year-old who had worked as a mechanic and owned heavy road equipment, which he sometimes leased out. Ralph's income was good when he earned contracts from the state or Forest Service to clear roads covered by mudslides. But he had also lost money on other business ventures, including a plan to crush rock into gravel on a Clearwater River island he and a business partner had purchased. Ralph and Patty's marriage was having ups and downs, too. They went through their longest split in late 1975. While they were separated, Patty hooked up with a man named Randy Benton. Randy is a musician whose band sometimes played at Van's Club. You'll hear from Randy in an upcoming episode. He and Patty knew each other from school, and they saw each other again when he was playing one night at Van's. Truth be told, it sounds like Patty seduced Randy that night to get back at Ralph for his relationships with other women. Patty told Ralph about her one-night stand with Randy when she and Ralph decided to give their marriage another try in the spring of 1976. Ralph said he forgave Patty, but he couldn't forget about that tryst. Ralph later admitted to police that he intended to kill Randy when he went to Van's Club with a gun the night Patty disappeared. He told police that he was the only man Patty had ever been with before she hooked up with Randy. Ralph said Patty's affair with the musician was more about her desire for new sexual experiences than revenge for his unfaithfulness. Patty and Ralph had often argued about Randy. They also argued about Ralph's history with other women and his drinking. Occasionally, the squabbles turned violent, and not just on Ralph's part. He had hit and choked Patty. She had fired a gun into the ceiling. It was the same gun Ralph had threatened to kill Randy with. This is Ralph's sister, Marcy Smith, talking about Patty and Ralph's relationship. Marcy ended up raising Patty's daughters after she disappeared.
She was a sweet, loving person. She could have a temper. And Ralph tried it more than once, you know.
Marcy said Patty would get upset about the other women in Ralph's life, past and present.
Patty knew about all of them. He was always up front, and they had a good marriage. The longer it went, there were ups and downs, and some of them, I wasn't proud of my brother. He was married and had children. But he just thought that was a privilege, and he never felt guilty for it.
Marcy said Ralph had a temper. She remembers two specific childhood incidents that could have ended tragically. The first time was when Ralph threw an axe and hit Marcy in the head with it. She was severely injured. Another time, Ralph and his older brother Jerry went after their younger brother Ray.
He liked to pick on Ray, and I was spending most of my life defending Ray and protecting him from... I stopped him in time one time when they were... my two older brothers were going... They were playing cowboys and Indians, and they were going to hang Ray. And I was terrified because I knew that it might happen. I went in and got Daddy so fast, and I thought, boy, now the boys are going to beat up on me. But I didn't care. And I think if it would have been left up to Ralph, I don't know.
So this was Ralph and Jerry?
Yeah, Ralph and Jerry. Yeah, I don't know. I think Jerry might have stopped him. But to this day, I knew that Ray's life was in danger.
In the hours before Patty and Ralph fought, the evening of August 31st, Patty had gone to a night class at the Valley Business School, a little more than 3 miles from her and Ralph's house. Patty had been taking classes at the school for more than a year and a half, and she had registered for a new daytime class that would start on September 7th. She was training to become a secretary. Was she taking steps to start a new life? Ralph's family thinks so and earnestly believes she's still alive. They have many theories about why she hasn't been found. On the other hand, Patty's family is certain that Ralph killed her. Before going to school that night, Patty had dropped off her daughters at her parents' house. After class, she made a quick stop at Alice's house before going to her parents' place to pick up the girls. Patty stayed at her parents' house to talk and sip beer for an hour or two before heading home. We know Patty made it home with the girls after leaving her parents' house at about 11 p.m. The girls were safe in their basement bedroom when the sun rose on September 1st. This is Patty's sister Alice again.
She came to our house after she got done with school. She came by to tell me she was going to make my birthday cake. And she didn't stay long because Mom and Dad had the kids, so she was going to go get the kids and go home. And that is the last. I mean, she probably wasn't there more than 10 minutes. But she wanted to make sure that she told me she was going to make my birthday September 2nd. So she was going to make my birthday cake and she was going to go pick the kids up from Mom and Dad's. And go home, and that was the last right there that I saw her. And then he called me the next morning and asked me where Patty was. Did I know where Patty was? And I said no. And I just got this, I can still remember this feeling, this sick feeling inside myself. And I'll never forget that feeling. I knew something was wrong. And as soon as I got off the phone, I called my dad and I said, I know something's wrong. I said, Ralph's going to bring me the girls. Would you come over? You watch the kids so I can go down and look at the house.
With nerves on edge, Alice quickly walked through the house looking for any signs of what may have happened after Patty arrived home the night before.
So there was nothing in the house that made the hair on your neck stand up?
Nothing I could see. But then, like I said, I was very nervous. I'm not sure what I was looking for, but I did not see any blood. I did not see any furniture overturned like they were got in a big fight like that.
She doesn't recall many of the details today, but in 1976, Alice told police that the cushion from the living room couch was missing when she walked through the house. Patty had only recently reupholstered the living room furniture.
That was another thing about Patty. She had never done very much sewing or anything. And they had got this old couch, and she decided she was going to reupholster it. And he said, go for it. And it turned out really nice. She wasn't afraid to try something new like that.
She did it all herself?
Yes, all herself. He bought her an extra duty sewing machine thing. And she did the whole couch and cushions and everything all by herself. And it really turned out nice. It was kind of a... But when she sets her mind to try something new like that, she can do it. She'd love to rearrange the furniture. She'd crafty kind of, you know, paint things. Redo the furniture, repaint furniture.
Why would the cushion from a couch that had recently been recovered be missing from the living room? Lewiston Police Detective Tom Saline wondered the same thing, and he asked Ralph about it during their interview a few days later. Ralph told Detective Saline that the cushion was at an upholstery shop for repairs. If the cushion had been soiled or damaged by the kids or a rowdy house guest, couldn't Patty have repaired it herself? Ralph's story doesn't really add up. It's not clear if detectives were aware that the living room furniture had only recently been reupholstered, but we don't have a record about them probing further about the missing cushion. The upholstery shop Ralph mentioned is still in business. It specializes in custom car, aircraft, and boat interiors, although employees also recover household furniture. The man who runs the shop now is the son of the original owner. He said all the business receipts from 1976 are long gone. I want to give you an overview of the town where Ralph and Patty lived and the terrain that surrounded them. It's important to keep in mind what Patty would have encountered if she had decided to wander out on her own in the middle of the night. If Patty really wanted to disappear, Idaho was a great place to do so. Even today, you can travel miles without encountering a single human. The majority of the state isn't populated. It's truly wild, untouched by roads and inaccessible by most passenger vehicles. More than 4.5 million acres of wilderness stretch out across the state. Much of it is densely forested, but larger swaths are scrubby deserts interrupted by canyons, streams, and rivers. Virtually every mile of the state is hilly, and thousands of acres are ridged by mountains. The six U.S. states that touch the potato capital are also mostly unpeopled in the areas that bump up against Idaho. And of course, there's Canada to the north. Well, you get the picture. Keep in mind also that this was the mid-1970s, a time when the United States seemed to be teeming with serial killers. Gary Ridgway, often known as the Green River Killer, Ted Bundy, and Robert Yates Jr. all prowled for victims not far from the spot where Patty was last seen alive. But Bundy was in police custody when she vanished, and it doesn't seem as though Ridgway's killing career had begun yet. Yates was working as a correctional officer in Walla Walla, Washington, and his known victims were all sex workers in the Spokane area. Walla Walla and Spokane are both about a 2-hour drive from Lewiston. It's certainly possible that another predator could have grabbed Patty if she left her house in the dark that night. In a later episode, we'll discuss a couple of potential suspects who are known to have actually been in Lewiston, Idaho around this time. Lewiston itself sits on the western edge of the Idaho Panhandle, about 180 miles south of the Canadian border. Back in 1976, about 27,000 people called Lewiston home. The city's population and landmass had more than doubled 7 years earlier when an area called the Orchards on the south end of town was annexed by the city. Patty's sister and parents lived in the Orchards. Patty and Ralph's house, which originally belonged to Ralph's parents, sat about halfway up a steep hill on 29th Street. The family lived less than a mile south of the Clearwater River, which forms the city's northern boundary. The Snake River flows northward along the city's western edge. The west-flowing Clearwater joins the Snake River at Lewiston's northwest corner. From there, the Snake veers sharply to flow westward into Washington State. Ralph's friend Bonnie recalled to us that Spokane, Washington was where Ralph took her shopping for a pair of hot pants and white go-go boots on September 1st, 1976. However, police records and check registers indicate that on that day, Ralph actually purchased a woman's pantsuit, a necklace, and other items from the Vogue shop in Lewiston. The boots came from another nearby store. A store clerk initially identified Ralph's shopping companion as Patty, based on photos of Patty and the clerk's recollection. Ralph's family touted that as proof that Patty was alive and well. The clerk was considered a reliable witness because she was married to a former Lewiston police officer. Patty was petite and blonde, so was Bonnie. It's easy to see how a store clerk looking at a photo of Patty could confuse the two. According to police reports, Bonnie herself later confirmed that she was the woman shopping with Ralph in Lewiston on September 1st. More than four decades later, Bonnie's memory is understandably a bit fuzzy. Perhaps Ralph took her shopping for new clothes more than once. Another potential clue that Patty might have covertly slipped out of town came from a check register found in the auto home. It showed that a check for $61 had been written to Greyhound Bus Lines. Could Patty have been planning to vanish that night or soon afterward and actually purchased a bus ticket for herself in advance? After learning that a check had been written at a bus depot, Ralph's brother Ray went down to the bus station to ask questions. He learned that Greyhound did not accept checks for bus tickets. However, the bus line did accept checks to pay for freight shipped on the bus. Ray later conceded that Ralph had been the one to write the check, and it was for freight. It's not clear if Ralph was receiving a shipment or instead was paying to send a bulkier, heavy package to someone else. Next time on Still.
He came out to the shop one day and was just, it scared me. I'd never seen him like that before, and he was just spitting mad.
Anyone with information pertaining to the disappearance of Patricia Otto should contact the Lewiston Police Department's tip line at 208-298-3939. Anyone with information pertaining to the identity of the Findlay Creek Jane Doe or other information related to that case should contact the Union County District Attorney at da@union-county.org. If you or anyone you know is a victim of domestic abuse, please contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-SAFE. Still is a production of The Reporter's Notebook and Grayson Shaw Media. You can connect with us online at thereportersnotebook.com or via email at info@thereportersnotebook.com. Still was researched, written, and produced by Karen Shaw Anderson. Additional research and script editing provided by Christine Hughes. Original music by Smith Uoso. Additional narration provided by BJ Blackburn. I'm your host and associate producer, Gary Anderson. Special thanks to everyone who graciously provided interviews and helped with our research. We would specifically like to thank the Advocates for Patricia Otto and the Findlay Creek Jane Doe Task Force. Like, follow, and subscribe to Still on your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on Facebook or Twitter to join the conversation. Ezekiel 34:16. I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed, and I will bind up the injured, and I will strengthen the weak.